Today is May 8th, 2015. I'm Lois Martinazzi, and I'm interviewing Bill Galbraith. Okay Bill?
The first item that I got for you is this. It's a petition of some sort.
Oh my gosh.
From in 1902, the sand point, or sand pit, I mean, is the designation.
At a point, you know, on the Dayton Road, you know, that was Twalett and Sherwood Road.
Yeah. And see, that's why I think it comes from the ore place across and hits Seipel Road up here at the corner.
And there's a Clear.
On Herman.
Yeah, John Clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Telephone pole, north sand pit. Gore Crossing. Known as the Gore Crossing.
That's what I was trying to figure out.
Because I know where the Gore House is.
Well, when it goes on and it starts down the north side of the railroad track, I think that's Herman Road.
Okay.
See, that's why I think it goes to the corner up there.
A mile west of the Taylor's Ferry Bridge, said road to follow the road now traveled by the public.
See, that's how they used to get into Portland.
Yes. Eldridge, Klong. That was a Chinese guy.
That's Jim Chinaman, and I've got his picture.
Galbraith, Luigi Podesta.
No, that's Art.
Art, that's correct.
Uncle Buzz.
Yeah.
And then Luigi Podesta and
Joseph Galbraith.
Joseph, that's Grandpa.
Yeah, And then
down here, I'm not... the only William Wilson that I remember knowing... Did you ever know Alec Wilson, who was the big trainer and everything for the Portland Hunt Club?
No.
Well, anyway, Bill Wilson, the Bill Wilson that I remember, was he did for the, I don't know which riding club or riding academy it was, but it was over in Garden Home. And Alex lived next to him, and Alex was the big cheese for the Portland Hunt Club. They were Scotch, very Scotch. And Bill and Lucille was his wife. They used to come out here to the house all the time, and they were really good friends of Dad. And then when Dad died, they continued a very close relationship with Mom. And that's the only, the only William Wilson that I can remember. But, and then I don't know, recognize the gardener name at all.
I don't either. And then this name I can't read.
I can't, it looks like, I think it's the French guy that used to have... Well, in fact, I think he had Uncle Don's filbert orchard at one time. But I see a name that could be.
And it would probably be on the 1900 census.
Well, yeah, I think this thing is probably before. See, Uncle Buzz would have been. This is the 1920 census.
Yeah, right.
But. At any rate, it's clearly 1902, and I know Uncle Buzz would have been considered an adult. The thing that surprises me is John Chong in there, because that's Jim Chinaman. And Chinese couldn't even own property.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Yeah. See, and you know, I told you about his grave down there. See, it's John C. Young, Young, on the stone, because he changed his name. That was Jim's problem with the Tong, is he Americanized himself. I mean, he cut off his
Oh, that's
queue
right.
And
didn't the Tong kill him?
Yeah, well, no. My dad saved him from getting killed.
Is that right?
Yeah. And see, that's how I think... I thought first that was how Dad ended up with Wacoma Beach. because Jim had, we used to go out to what the part of Lincoln City that's now Wacoma, and in fact the old Low Camp store is there. It was just above where what was that big restaurant that they used to have? It doesn't make any difference. Anyway, Dad ended up, and the family story was always that Dad was taking Jim out there to the coast. Jim had worked in the logging camps and had bought a bunch of the old crummy shacks. Mm-hmm. And moved them onto this property down in Wacoma, and was setting up a motel, I guess is what it would be. But at any rate, Dad was taking Jim out to the coast at one time, and out by Grand Round, just this side of Grand Round, I forget what that intersection is called, but they were put up on by a bunch of Chinese. Well, I don't know how many, but anyway, and Dad outran him and saved Jim's life. And that was where the big Studebaker came from. That's Grandpa Brzesko, but the car behind it. And I've never forgiven Bud and Joe for tearing it up to use the engine to run the sawmill.
Oh, for God's sakes, really?
But at any rate, Jim gave my dad, that's a 1930 Studebaker President, which is like a Cadillac
today. Oh, wow, yeah.
And he gave Mom a gasoline washing machine.
Wow.
And that used to be in the barn down there. I don't know where it disappeared to, but but at any rate, Dad kind of subdivided that property. And I always thought that he, because that was where we used to go for vacation all the
right.
time, you know, when we're there. I kind of think that Dad took the title to the property because Jim couldn't own property
right.
at that time. But at any rate, I'm getting far astray.
Well, let's getting back to this. Now, what road do you think that is?
I think it is the road between, that comes in, the Cypole Road that comes in from Orr's Place.
Right, right.
And I think it just comes across and connects to, up there by Uncle Don's place. I mean, I think it's just, where Herman Road butts into Cypole Road up
right.
there in the
corner. Yeah.
And because they talk about something about coal in here, too, and that was what made me think that that's what it is.
Do you have a copy machine? Can you print? Can you copy that?
I can't copy now. My copy.
Okay.
But I trust you with it if you want to.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Copy.
Would you really?
And,
oh, yeah, okay. I'll take it and make a copy and bring it back.
Yeah. But at any rate, well, that's what we're talking about right there.
Now tell me more about Sand Pit. Where was Sand Pit?
Well, right there at the corner of where Cypole and Herman connect.
Oh.
They're down in there. We used to call it the tar pit because there was a bunch of tar that was dumped down in there. There's a deal down in there. But I think that's where they got the... And then, people used to haul sand from that area up there, and I think that's probably where it's got its name. You see, Cypole came about because... I don't know, maybe I've told you that, but anyway, the name Cypole came about because when they put the railroad siding in down there, they shipped the onions out of here.
Mm-hmm.
The farmers put it in, and the railroad agent says, we need the name for the siding so we know right. where they dumped the cars. I mean, and this is like in the 1900s. I mean, early, very early. Cause I don't know when the railroad came through, but
1889.
Yeah, see, that would be about right. And it hadn't picked up the name, but this is probably the sand pit is probably the original name from the area. But at any rate, when they were putting the siding in, they needed a name. And Grandpa Joe says, "You're not going to call it Gabbett." See, he was the one that leased the land. Grandpa Joe was the one that leased the land to the railroad to put the siding in. He said, "You're not going to call it Galbraith because of the Tualatin-Galbraith connection, you know." And Grandpa Brzezko says, "We call it Supele," which means onion, because we shipped the onions out of here. And that's where the name stuck from there. That's why I always get, you know, the yuppies call it Chipola all the time, which is the Mussolini Italian. Well, and the Tuscan dialect. But I am told by my cousin in Italy that the dialect was more like Cipolle. And that's how it got bastarded into Cipolle.
Yes.
Well, and they probably didn't know how to spell Cipolle and just spelled it C-I-P-O-L-E. The historic Oregon names gives that credit. That story to the crediting where the name Cipolle came from.
It gave it to who? Podesto?
No, the historic Oregon names, when it comments on the name of Cipolle, they talk about
the onions.
And I run into these old Italian women and said, "Oh, my grandfather named that." That they weren't even in this area at that time, but I belong to the Paisano Club in Portland, and every now and then I run across the guy, "Oh, my grandfather did this." You know, I set him straight pretty quick.
Well, now, a little upset about it, did Irwin come and start the onion business here, onion farming?
Yes, Irwin Cummins.
Yes.
That's right. And incidentally, I have here the part of the satisfaction of the mortgage in 1866. It's the back of the satisfaction of the mortgage.
Irwin Cummins. Humphreys was a judge or something, or I've heard that name.
Well,
before.
He was probably the lawyer that drew the satisfaction.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
See, I know that there's more. See, it's just like this piece of paper here.
Yeah.
And see, what they used to do when they had these mortgages like that, they didn't just stamp them, you know, paid or anything like that. They always tore apart. That's what I thought this was originally, because they used to take the mortgages and tear them in half, and then the payor would keep half, and the
really.
I think that's probably where that came from. And then this is Grandpa Joe's receipt in 1904 for payment of the taxes on parts of it.
Tom, yeah. Okay, that's another one I want to copy.
I'm getting lost here. we were talking about the road. I think you know where I think it's located.
Yes.
The other thing that I wanted to talk to you about was, you know, I'm sure you've read Reynolds's book on Sherwood.
Yes.
Well, at any rate, she has in there a story that she attributes to Mary Sergino. I think either she misunderstood Mary, or Mary was trying to protect Aunt Bess, because Reynolds's story is that John Galbraith, my dad, lost a filbert orchard to the Chinese to a Chinese person in a gambling foray, and that Mrs. Galbraith was very upset about it. Well, it wasn't John Galbraith, it was Don Galbraith.
Oh, Don Galbraith,
yes.
That lost it.
That was the Don's son.
No. Don's son was the one that lost the gambling game.
Right.
See, Don, of course, you know, was the coach at Tualatin High
School.
Yeah,
I know.
But Don was always trying to figure more money. And at any rate, he went to work as a Portland City policeman. He and Freddie West, Aunt Cal's son, were city cops in Portland. Donald was the bagman for the police department. This is
what's a bagman?
This is the family story that I'm
right.
giving you. I have no evidence to support it except the things around here. But listening to the family story, the bagman is the guy that picks up the money from the gamblers and gives it to the chief of police, so they don't raid the gambling.
Oh gosh, yeah. Thing. Oh boy.
Yeah. And Donald became enamored with gambling. And Donald spent his whole life in something connected with gambling. You know.
Just a minute. His mother was Bessie Smith, right?
Yes.
See, well, you know, I remember Don Galbraith. He used to work in the onion fields.
Don?
Yeah, would be.
Yeah, Grandpa. Uncle Don.
Yeah.
Well, Uncle Don became my substitute father
when
Dad died. See.
You know, I remember him with. Well, I remember seeing this picture, and I think I remember seeing him with some big thing out that collected the bugs.
Yeah, the fly trap.
Did you have a picture of that?
No, but I think Dick Pelleggi does.
Dick, really?
Yeah. So I know I've seen, well, in fact, we had a picture of it, but I can't find it. See, all of this stuff, when Mom died, Bud and Mom were living in the house here,
mm-hmm.
and right where I've got the library now was Mom's bedroom, and she died in there, and Bud was sleeping upstairs.
What year did your mother die?
My mom? I was afraid you did.
Oh, it doesn't matter. I can look
anyway,
at the cemetery.
Anyway, it was in the... I think it was in the late 60s or early 70s,
oh, okay.
Somewhere along in there. But when Bud then moved into that bedroom, and then when he started going downhill was when I came out and lived down in Aunt Jane's house and watched over him. But at any rate, when Bud moved into that bedroom, he never touched Mom's dresser, and he just put this plastic over it. Well, after he died and I decided I was going to renovate the house, and that's where I got a lot of this stuff.
Oh, wow.
Out of Mom's dresser drawer.
My God, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I gave some of it to Joe, just like Joe when they tore down the old Cummins house that Grandpa Joe and Uncle Raymond lived in. Joe went down there and scooped up all of the stuff from the uh-huh. back bedrooms and
yeah.
everything, and that's where a lot of this stuff came from. And then a lot of it I found in Mom's dresser drawer. But as far as the story of the Filbert Orchard, I followed that firsthand because I was 8 years old when Uncle Don ended up deeding it to the Chinaman. And that, see, the family always called that the Chinaman's Orchard.
Oh, really?
For all the time. It was just a family story, and I'm sure nobody else is, but that orchard is right there at the bend of the road across from what is now the wildlife area. The orchard's still there.
It's still there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That is. That is this piece of ground right here. See, this is the old Krause Road coming in, and this is where, this is the strip that, did you know Anastas, George Anastas, the Greek? That's where this his celery farm was. He used to raise celery, and then he put board on it, so it was all white celery.
Oh, right, yeah. This is a big popular.
And then this is the piece that Nels Anderson ended up with, and this is where Kenny Shergina bought that. Joe lived in that house that's there when he first got married. But this is a road that the wildlife area is right over here.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And at any rate, then there were always these whispered stories, and that's, I'll get back to this later, but you remember your story about Grandpa Joe and the lady of the night?
Yes.
Yeah, well, see, that house that Grandpa Joe was in was just right down here. It was just right about where that fence goes across now. It's underneath the power lines.
That wasn't that great big house.
No. This is the house that he lived in the last few years of his life, because Uncle Raymond took over the big house down there, and then Grandpa Joe, it was just a little two-room shack is all it was. And in fact, I remember being in there once before Grandpa died, but I could not have been over 3 or 4 years old, because Grandpa Joe died in 1934 or something like that, so I couldn't have been more than 4 years old. But I do remember all of the whispered stories.
Oh, good. Let's hear them.
Well, you know, what I was getting to, and it has to do with this and the book and everything else. It's one of the things that ticks me off about people that are writing history books of areas. Like, you wrote because you were there. I mean, you know, and then this gal comes in and thinks, oh, I'm going
to write. Well, you know, I have a bone to pick with her, too, because she said Winona was a community.
Oh.
And it was not.
No, never.
You know, there's an absolute explanation for that name, both the Grange and the cemetery.
Yeah.
So, you know, I agree. She just came in.
Yeah.
Didn't know anything.
And started babbling and listened to people without ever checking what the story is. See, the reason I'm commenting on that is because Bud and Thelma were very upset that you wrote that story about.
Well, I'm sorry.
Don't be. I'm kind of proud of it.
Well, you know, I can't remember exactly where I heard that, but somebody told me that.
Oh, hell,
it was in the paper.
Story in the paper.
It was in the newspaper.
Yeah.
That's right.
And you know, I think it kind of proved the adage is just because there's snow on the roof, no sign there's not a fire inside.
That's right.
But at any rate, and I told him that. I said, what the hell? It's part of the family history.
Yeah.
And I can remember Anna and Aunt Jane and Mom, and, you know, they'd be talking, and then they'd relate back to that, you know, and they always referred to her as that woman.
Oh, God! Well, you know what? Next year will be the 100th anniversary of her death, and I'm going to write a play about it.
Yeah, well,
and
okay.
If you want to be in the play, you can play
your grandfather. Well, I don't know about being in the play, but I sure as hell cooperate with you in any way. But at any rate, and that's kind of what I'm doing on this story here on the Filbert Orchard, because I want to write, and I was going to ask your help putting it together. I mean, I, you know, all of my writing has been legal writing,
sure,
and everything
yeah.
like that. I was going to write a book on the comparison of the Warren Court and the Rehnquist Court.
Oh, really?
And I've got boxes and boxes of stuff, but I've never got around to actually scribbling it out. But at any rate, I want to write an article on this, just what we're talking about. People shouldn't write history unless they got some connection, at least local history.
Yes, and go back to, as much as you can, original documents.
Yeah, well, and that's... See, I was 8 years old when this happened. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. remembering, I was thinking for a long time that I was just going back when Grandpa Joe, Uncle Don deeded the Filbert Orchard
to. I see,
too.
I see, yeah.
But at any rate, that's what I was explaining to mm-hmm. Thelma and Bud. What the hell? It's part of the history, and I think we should be a little proud of it.
Yeah, and it wasn't meant to discourage him because it was proven.
Well, and they weren't all that. Well, Bud was a little, because Bud was really close to Grandpa Joe.
Oh.
Bud, had polio when he was like four years old. But Bud was the one that Grandpa Joe always took down to the Tallent River fishing and everything like that. And he just thought that was
bad. I'm so sorry.
No.
I liked Bud really well.
I talked him out of it.
Good for you. Well, I saw Anna over at the cemetery, and she told me the same thing, that she didn't like that. And
I'm sorry. I guess it was Anna and Bud that were that. I was thinking it was Thelma, but I can't feature Thelma being that upset about it. But I know Bud and Anna both were. But like I say, it sure still doesn't bother me, and it's accurate. I mean,
yeah, it was in the Oregonian.
Yeah, but that's what would bring me to this. If I can digress from what we're talking about. Young Don, got enamored with the gambling and got in debt to the Chinaman.
This was after he was a school teacher?
Oh, yeah. It was when he was a cop in Portland.
Now, how come he quit teaching? Did he get fired?
Well, I can't answer that. I don't know, but I strongly suspicion was that he just could make more money as a cop, especially make more money as a bagman.
Heard that he used to beat the students up. Pretty rough teacher.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh. No, but at any rate, well, and teachers, if they made $20 a month, then was probably. But Don, all of his life, he was a fight promoter when he was down in Utah. Mm. And as a matter of fact, just after I moved back here, and Don, by that time, had ballooned way out of shape, and he couldn't move. Well, anyway, he had a floating card game or crap game or something and was raided out there. I think it was out around Garden Home. I mean, this I'm talking about in the 1960s, late 1960s, probably.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It was before he died. I don't know whether it was before or after Aunt Bess died.
But who was Aunt Bess?
Pardon me?
Who was Aunt Bess?
Bessie Smith.
Oh, Bessie. Oh, Bessie Galbraith. Yeah. Bessie Smith,
Yeah. And see, Aunt Bess, was big in the Republican Party.
Oh.
I mean, she was big on the County Central Committee. And Tootie claimed that she was on, my sister claimed that Aunt Bess was on the Republican National Committee before she died. But I'm researching that to see if that, but anyway, she was very status conscious. And in fact, she was the one that connected me with Wayne Morse.
Oh, really?
Wayne
Morse was a Democrat, wasn't he?
He was Republican originally.
Oh, originally?
Wayne Morse's big claim to fame was he was the first guy during my lifetime that switched from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party.
Oh.
He did it the way everybody did. I switched to an independent.
Yeah,
and
right.
But see, he was dean of the University of Oregon Law School mm-hmm. for a long time. And in fact, I think he was dean at that time.
Did you go to Willamette or did you go to Oregon, University of Oregon?
Me? No, I went to Willamette. Uh-huh. And, but at any rate, getting back to this,
yeah.
Don was a fight promoter. He had the floating crap game. I mean, he was always connected with, he never made enough money. He just wanted to do something a little beyond that all the time. But at any rate, he got in the problem with the Chinaman. And Uncle Don and Aunt Bess, to pay his debt, deeded this to the Chinaman, in quotes, I say.
Oh, for God's sake.
And to take care of it. And the story, especially after I went to law school, the story always bothered me because I couldn't figure out why. First of all, you know, gambling debts were not enforceable. Except, of course, by probably beating somebody.
Right,
to death.
Or gone.
But I mean, it was. I went back and got the old Oregon compiled laws annotated, and that's and then the other thing that bothered me: how could he deed it to the Chinaman, even like in 1938, because it was illegal to do that. And so it bothered me to the point that I went over and got the deed to show that that it it's deeded to Ruth Key Fong. Now, there's either one of two aspects of the thing. Either I first thought, well, it was to disguise the payment of the gambling debt. See, because it was probably her husband that was the gambler.
Right.
And then I suddenly remembered Chinese. In fact, it was illegal to deed to Chinese.
In 1938?
In 1938. It was illegal up until about 1954.
Is that right?
Yeah. And, well, it was when the Oregon Laws Annotated came in. I mean, Oregon ORS, Oregon Revised Statute. But I kind of thinking, and I'm trying to run it down because I'm looking up all of the obituaries for all of the Ruth Key Fongs. I'm kind of thinking that Ruth may have been Caucasian, and that's the reason it was deeded to her.
Oh, yes, Ruth, yeah.
Yeah, huh. Ruth Key. Now, there's a Key is a Chinese name, and but at any rate, that's the story of that deed and that piece of property. It was not John Galbraith, it was Don Galbraith. And it was not because Don Galbraith was indebted to the Chinese, it was because his son Don was indebted to the Chinese. The revenue stamps on it are only for $2,000. But in 1938, $2,000.
Yeah, that was a depression.
Good,
yeah, it was a lot of money.
But
how many acres was that?
Well, it's still the same acreage. It's all this right here.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, no, it was 26 acres.
Well,
who
did they sell it to? Who did the Chinese sell it to, or did they?
They had it up until about let's see. I think they had it. I'm not finding it here. But I think they had it up until about the late 40s. Because, you know, even when I was, we just always call it the Chinaman. And the Chinese, in fact, I think that this guy that works for the body shop that took care of my car, He ended up owning it. Germain, I think, was his name. Where the hell is it? I thought I saw where she still had it on here. See, that's pretty close still to being part of the Cummins land grant. I mean, I take it back. I think the Cummins land grant probably ran. Where's this Cummins? But I know the Cummins land grant ran across Rock Creek. It's kind of, well, here's a copy of the patent for it. Joe had the original of that, which it ended up with Johnny.
What did Johnny do with it?
Well, Johnny died.
I know. I know.
And I think his idiot fucking wife burned it all up. It's just like Grandpa Sam's discharge from the army in like 1860 something or 50 something.
Yeah, it would have been 50 because he came out in 52, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah. It would have been 40 something. 40. Well, he fought in the Mexican War.
Right, the Mexican
and,
War.
In fact, he had a land grant in the Republic of Texas because he had fought in the
Really? Yeah. Well, who was it that he met out here and realized that he had fought in the Mexican War with him? One of the
Can't
settlers.
Answer that.
Well, it's in our book, I think. Because when Mom wrote her history, it was in there, and she talked to Joe.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Zachary Taylor was the general. Yeah, and he's related to me.
Yeah. Well, and Sam also was under Sheridan when Sheridan went down for the Indian.
Is that right?
Stuff down in In fact, in George's biography, they talk about that. I've got George's biography.
And who's George?
George Galbraith.
Oh, really?
Joe's brother.
See,
George was the oldest.
That's right. And yeah, Joe was next.
It goes George, Joe, John, Oliver, Kirk, and Sam. And I always thought this was George, but when I found
him, I did too.
Now,
this is Joe. Huh.
No, this is Joe.
Oh, I see. Yes, yeah, that.
Yeah, this is George.
And who's this one? Oh, this is.
I don't know. I had that thing out here because I wanted to show it to you. And I had it out several days ago. Aunt Jane gave me a picture of them standing up. I don't know if you've ever seen that one, because I thought you might have it because Johnny ended up with the original of it. Aunt Jane gave me the original of that picture. And then I had given it to Joe to make copies of. And Joe never gave it back to me. But anyway.
What is that?
It's called a streamer, and that was was having.
Yeah.
I got to shut it off somewhere. It picks up my cell phone and wirelessly transcribed it into my hearing aid.
Good. Okay.
But at any rate, Joe ended up with the picture, and I don't know who it was. I know who it was. There was a gal from not Lewiston. It's on the Washington. She is from Lewiston, Idaho. And she is the great granddaughter of George. And she wanted to say that was George, and I accepted it. But I'm I mean, Aunt Jane would.
Sure. Was her name Higgins?
No.
Viola Higgins?
No, it was. I'm kicking myself for not trying to be able to remember, because I wanted to look her up and go back and argue with her.
Yeah.
About it. And I don't know who it was that told me that John's picture is on the wall of the Montana Historical Society.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, see, have you ever heard of Montana Croft? She's the poet laureate from Montana.
Really?
She is George's, John's, she's John's great-granddaughter. And I can't tell you if that's John or John's son. You remember when you called about the guy that was looking for great uncle John's tombstone?
Yes,
down
yes.
Here. Well, that's I think that may be him, because I've got another picture.
Didn't John marry an Indian?
Yeah, and I think I've got the wedding picture.
Oh my gosh. Now, Johnny told me one time that he had a picture of a wagon bringing a tombstone for John with a horse. Did you ever see that at the cemetery?
I've got a bunch of pictures of John's grave when he was buried.
Oh, gosh.
Down here.
Oh,
see,
my gosh.
John was killed on the train.
Yeah, was he murdered?
Yeah, because he'd won big in the poker game. I mean, this is the family story.
Right.
The story that I always had was that, John brought his cattle. He was a big rancher up there. And is I have discovered, apparently fairly prominent in Montana history. But he used to bring his cattle to Portland for sale. And he rode in the...
He drove
the cattle, the cattle train.
Cattle drive.
Yeah. The cattle train.
Oh, on the train.
On the train.
Okay.
And he got involved in the poker game on the train and won big, and then ended up poisoned in his sleep. And that's why he's buried down here. The whole family was in Montana at that time.
But he was on his way... My God, really?
He was on his way to Portland and...
What happened to the cattle?
Well, it... got, because it was taken, I mean, it taken care of, and I'm sure the family ended
got
up
the
with money and everything,
yeah.
because it was brought to the sale yards down here. So,
well, and John has a fabulous tombstone.
Oh, I know. And they're all Masons, you know.
Oh, that's right, sure.
Yes, Sam and John and I think Kirk has a... Mm-hmm. Compass and square.
Well, George was real active in the Grange.
Well, Dad has a compass and square on it.
Is that right?
Yeah. But it's... but at any rate, that's the deed, and that's... I mean, this for this piece of property. And like I say, I'm still running down. What I wanted to do...
I want to copy that.
See, she's always just ignored me.
Who, that... Reynolds?
Reynolds, yeah. And I have left messages on her phone, you know, your story's wrong, and she's never ever called back.
Yeah.
And the thing that gets me is, you know, Anna's daughter, Elizabeth, goes regularly to the historical meetings and everything, and she has told her, you know, you should talk to Bill. So what I was thinking about doing was either writing a letter to the editor or writing an article that you would approve of.
Yes.
And get them to put it in the Tribune, or, you know, the Pamplin prints,
yeah.
Not only the Tigard one, but the Sherwood.
The Sherwood one. Is that the Gazette?
Yeah,
Gazette, yeah. Yeah. Are you on a Sherwood Mail route or Tualatin?
Pardon me?
Are you on a Sherwood Mail route or Tualatin?
I'm on a Sherwood.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should send you my stories, because I write one every month.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. But, you know, I didn't want to get anything liable. it has always stuck in my craw, because there was one thing my dad wasn't, was a gambler. I mean, he always used to say farming is a gambling.
Yeah, God, isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth?
And
yeah.
The other phrase he always said, you know, when something would go wrong, that's what makes farming interesting. I can remember. See, I was only about almost 6 years old when Dad died. But I used to follow around every Saturday morning or so. All of these guys would congregate way under that tree down there at the far end. Well, there wasn't a tree there then, but they over there by Rock Creek or under this big tree right down here. And they'd talk about the crops and things like
sure.
that. And I can remember the conversation that always, and I think that's probably the thing that made me finally end up being a Democrat, but they were talking, I think that they were going to have to go to 5 or 10 cents an hour or something for weeders and yeah. growers and all that, you know. And guys, Dave Sergino, for one, was saying, oh, shit, I just don't know how we're going to be able to do that. You know, it's the same thing that you hear
sure,
today.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, and I can remember my dad's comment was, I don't know. He said, you know, the help is the worst place to start cutting the overhead.
Oh, my God, isn't that the truth?
And that has stuck with me all my life.
Yeah. That is
I mean,
true.
How more modern a comment could you make?
Isn't that true? You know, I weeded onions for Chet Fishbrook, and we're paid 75 cents an hour, and we girls kept up with the men, and we told him we need 85 cents an hour. His mother wouldn't allow it. She held the purse strings.
Oh, yeah, no. Well, you started rather late in the game.
It was like...
When I started, I think it was 25 cents an hour. I got the first money that I ever earned was Uncle Don paid me 25 cents for cutting the cow bean out of the oat field up there for that strip of land.
The cow bean, now what's that?
Lupin.
Oh, sure. Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's cut it out.
Well, it was weeding. In effect, right. It was weeding his oat crop. You know,
I see. Roping it out, yeah.
Yeah, go through it and just knock them down. But I got 25 cents for that, and I was really proud
of
that.
Well, that's good.
yeah. But
I'm going to ask you a question now. Do you remember the spinning wheel?
The restaurant?
The spinning wheel. It was...
The real spinning wheel.
Yeah, well, the gambling place up by Jerkins Park.
I didn't remember it being called that, but yes.
It burned down in the mid-30s.
I don't remember that.
But it was prohibition.
My first real memory of anything, and again, I had to be not more than 4 years old. I got to thinking, you know, because Dad... Jurgens Park, you know, old John had the kind of a grocery store and gas station.
And cabins and stuff.
But they also had one-armed bandits.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. And I remember that my first savings account was started with I won the jackpot. I mean, my dad lifted me up to the handle, and I pulled the handle down. And I think it was something like $15 in nickels.
Oh, wow.
and that dad took me right from there up to the bank.
To the bank in Sherwood.
In the
Citizens Bank.
Sherwood.
Yeah.
And I was hoping that my savings account book was in Mom's dresser, but I couldn't find it.
Oh, gosh.
But I started that
You know, that was one of the smartest things your dad could do, to take you to the bank.
Yeah.
So you didn't blow that money, but you saved it.
Yeah.
Well,
4 years old, what the hell?
Yeah. That's right, 4 years
and
old.
Well, and I was probably five, because I remember so many things about my dad, and I stopped to think that, shit, I wasn't 6 years old when he died, but I can remember. I remember that stuff down there. And Bud used to say, oh, that's bullshit. You don't remember. You can't remember that. You know? But I did. I remember the night he died.
Your father died?
Yeah. I mean, the house sat right here. Well, in fact, I got a picture of the old house. And when we built this house, that house was pulled off, and we lived in it out there without any water, and the outhouse was right out back by this big old cherry tree. And it was August 14th of 1935, and we were going to move into this house the next day.
Oh, wow.
And Grandpa Brzezko was dying, and he was set up in a bed in the living room, such as it was, in that old house, because Mom was taking care of him.
I see.
And at any rate, everybody was there. See, this is Annie Christensen, and that's my Uncle Charlie. She was married, and this is Grandpa Brzezko. This is Uncle Nini, and I'm named after my two drinking uncles, Uncle Buzz and Uncle Nini, William Arthur. But at any rate, Dad, Mom, Joe, but this is Uncle Charlie and Annie, and this is Andy and Charlie and Maya, and then this is Joe and Anna and Bud and Betty and Toot and Thelma.
Which one is your father?
This one.
Oh, okay.
Over here. But they were all here because Grandpa was dying, and Uncle Charlie and Aunt Annie and the kids and Uncle Nini were all here. And of course then there were seven of us, I think. No, Joe was still
here. Yeah, which one were you?
I'm not in there. Oh, no, there's Tootie comes between me. That picture is probably about 1922,
23. Oh, I see.
Because Betty is the baby, and she's 2 years younger than Bud. And that was after Bud had his polio. But
So how many kids does your folks have?
Nine. My mom...
Poor mother.
My mom weighed 98 pounds when she was married and was, I think I got a picture. Well, here, I got this picture. Here. I'm digressing again.
That's okay. That's what we historians do.
Well, anyway, I'll finish that story and then go on with that. This is my mom when she was married.
Oh, yeah.
Here. She weighed 98 pounds and had nine kids.
Oh, poor lady. And then who are all these people?
Well, this is Grandpa Brzezko, and that's Mom and Uncle Charlie and Uncle Nini.
Mm-hmm.
See, Grandma Brzezko died when she was 28 years old.
When she was 28?
Yeah.
Oh, she's beautiful. Oh, my gosh.
And
did she die in childbirth or what?
Well, I always thought she did, but she didn't die in childbirth because she died... Uncle Nini was probably about 2, I guess, when she died.
Oh.
So She died, let's see, Uncle Nemi was born, I think, in 90. Mom was born in 92, I think, and Uncle Nemi was born. Anyway, I went and she's buried in Lone Fir Cemetery.
Oh, Lone Fir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I go out there every year to put flowers on her.
Wow, that's too bad.
But anyway, the night Dad died.
I'll just set it here.
Yeah, no, I've been trying.
Well, who's on the other side?
That's the original picture.
Oh, that's the original. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a large portrait. Yeah,
but, and that was in the storeroom upstairs.
Oh, gosh.
But anyway, you know, all of these people were around, and Grandpa was down. He'd been in a coma for 2 days, I think it was, something like that. That's why.
And he was quite elderly, I suppose.
Well, he was 82, three, and he was elderly for then. I'm 85, you know. but anyway, Dad just, you know, was getting kind of stir-crazy with all the noise and everything around. And he grabbed me and loaded me in the Studebaker, and we went up to Uncle Don and Aunt Bess's. And he and Uncle Don, you know, sat at the table, and I remember Aunt Bess gave me a big piece of chocolate cake. Mm-hmm. and when we were coming back, there was a car in the road down there, about that was a field there where Joel's house was, and he was right in the middle of the road. With a lady, of course, and Dad honks the horn and blinks, and of course the lights are in the car, and the guy pulls off into the field, and I remember as we went by, him saying, "Sorry, old man." I mean, those things, I can't remember a lot of other stuff, but that stuff just sticks in my mind. And I came home, and I remember running upstairs. The upstairs, it was just like the upstairs in that house down there. It was just a big dormitory,
sure, like
thing. And all of the kids were up there because all of the adults were down, you know, watching Grandpa die,
yeah. I guess.
But at any rate, and I'm telling all of them the story. And while that's going on up there, Dad goes out to the outhouse. And I come back down the stairs. I mean, I assume at some time anyway he went out there, because when I came down the stairs and Mom is sitting next to Grandpa, and Grandpa is, you know, just laying there. And I related the story to everybody up there, and they weren't the least bit interested in it. Then I come running back down, and Mom is there. And just then, as I'm standing there next to her, Uncle Charlie comes in and said, "John's dead out here in the porch." And he apparently, I think, had a stroke or something coming back in. The death certificate says apoplexy, whatever that was. But at any rate, Mom always said it was a blood clot because he had hit his head in the barn down there really bad a week or so before. But at any rate, I can remember, again, just Grandpa Joe, I mean, Grandpa Brzesko, who's been laying there with his eyes closed for 2 days. And, of course, Mom had just gone to pieces when she heard that. And Grandpa Joe, Grandpa Brzesko opens his eyes and lays his hand on Mom and says, "My poor daughter."
Oh, God.
And closes his eyes and died.
Oh, she lost her father and her
husband. Within 20 minutes after my dad died, my mom's father died.
Oh, dear God. And she had 9 children.
Yeah. And, well, and that was probably her salvation, really, with all the kids. But, well, and that's how we, you know, when after Dad died, see, Bud was bound for Oregon State. He was going to go down there in forestry. And then Mom made a deal with him that if he'd come back and run the farm for her, that she'd give him this piece here, which she did.
You know, that happened to a lot of kids that wanted to go to college.
Yeah.
And my ex-husband, too, same thing.
And I don't think Bud ever, you know, he always talked about, you know, forestry and everything. And he was, he would stuffy any animal. You know, he'd take, like he took taxidermy courses by mail.
Really?
And, oh, God, he'd stuff anything. I mean, from a mole to, I think the biggest thing he was a, he stuffed a fox and a raccoon. I remember those, but he was very outwoodsy oriented. You know,
now, how old was he when he got polio? When he got polio, Bud.
Probably about 4.
And what did they do about it then?
I don't think anything. Yeah. I mean, I remember them telling stories about how they, you know, bathing and. Mm-hmm. Hot baths and work. But, you know, he's always, well, you can see in
I remember him. I remember him real well.
And his face was like he'd had a stroke or something. So he was just 10 years older than me.
Yeah. Irwin was the baby then.
Yeah.
And he must
it
have been.
It went Benny or John Benjamin, who was buried down there in the family plot. And where I'm going to be buried.
Good for you.
And,
good for you.
Benjamin, Joe, Anna, Thelma, Bud, Betty, Tootie, me, and Irwin.
I remember Irwin.
Oh,
I think he was a freshman when I was a senior or something. And
I remember he had the biggest funeral of anybody. I can remember. God. Yeah. That funeral possession.
No, somebody hit him with a car on Pacific Highway, is that right?
And lost his driver's license for 90 days.
Oh,
no,
God,
I don't.
Really?
I think he was suspended for 90 days. Or
oh, my gosh.
Like but yeah.
Is he buried over at Winona, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Benny, and then Joe and Madeline are cremated, but
their stones
they have
are
a stone there.
Yeah.
And then Dad's stone, and then Mom's stone, and Irwin's next, I guess. And then actually, Thelma's down there too, but her kids, I'm going to put a stone up down there for her because her kids have never done
it. Are you the only one left?
No, Betty's still alive.
Oh, she lives in King City?
Yeah. No, she lives in Summerfield.
I see.
There's a difference. she's got a nice house down there. But, and you know, her husband was Malloy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Bob Malloy.
Oh, yeah. That's from the Malloy area over south. Yeah.
Yeah, and they raised onions over there, too.
They what?
They raised onions over there.
Oh, they did? Yes, I know they did,
And and they raised onions down there where, in fact, that was, I think, George's property, George Galvin's property, down there by Wagers and
Oh, was that George's property?
Well, I tend to think it was because I know they lived. See, Nettie Ridenour was
George's
daughter.
Right.
And I think that she lived on George's property. George didn't have a land grant, but he was down there. In fact, the family story was always that George gave the property, you know, where the church used to sit down there. And I've always been going to try to trace the...
Now, the Methodist Church, you mean?
Yeah, the building, the historical...
No. That was donated by the Smith family. By the old lady Smith. What was her name? Caroline. And she...
Aunt Bess's mother or sister.
Yeah, let's see. John L. Smith's mother. So Bessie's grandmother.
Now, was it John or William that had the sawmill?
John. John L. Smith. John Leonard
and
Smith.
And John was Aunt Bessie's dad.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he was married, John L. was married to Sarah. Sarah, and when he died, she married a Wilkins.
Oh, that's why I couldn't call.
And then there was, they had Bessie, and then they had a son named Jesse. Did you know anything about him?
No.
Well, I
never really knew anything about Aunt Bess's side of the family, except that I knew that she was a daughter of Johnny Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And she, always,
she was mighty proud of that, wasn't she?
Oh, God. Just, yeah, she, Aunt Bess was very status conscious.
Oh.
Really nice lady, but she was very, well, like when she bought me and bought, well, she was the one that spirited Morris around when he was running for the Senate.
Really?
And she wanted me to meet him because I was going to go to law school.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to be sure that I had an in at University of Oregon.
Yeah.
But
right.
I went to Willamette instead.
Well, I think it's really says a lot. You told me before that your mother gave you a plot of land and said that you could raise a crop that would put you through college.
Yeah.
That was really wonderful of her.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise you might have been a dumb farmer all your life.
Well, yeah, and I've always resented the fact that I wasn't a dumb farmer
all
my life.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I didn't resent being a lawyer. In fact, they were great years. I mean, I never was rich from practicing law. It was more like living in a state of genteel poverty than being all the stories you hear about lawyers. But I always wanted to come back and revitalize the farm.
And then you did.
Well, yeah, but then I broke my back and it's kind of going to hell. But
you had talked before about selling the place.
And in fact, I got to go down and talk to the realtor about
it. Gosh.
What I'd like to do, if I could sell it and at least keep a life estate.
Yes. Yeah.
5 or 10 acres of it. But
so you don't do your gardens anymore, planting your artichokes?
Well, no. I'm getting ready to do that.
Oh,
I'm trying to salvage just that bunch of grass out there. There's that's another. Anyway, the artichokes. I did something last year that I'd never done. And I vernalized them.
You what?
Vernalized them. See, I've been raising those things for 20 years, or 18, I guess, something like that. And I have never had them freeze out. And the program was, I would plant 3 acres and 3 acres and 3 acres. And then on the fourth year, I'd go back and take the first 3 acres out and replant them, and then replant the second. They're good. Actually, if they're raised right, they're good for 3 to 5 years. Good production. But you eventually have to. And I've always planted them from transplants. And but at any rate, 2 years ago was the first year that I had ever had them freeze out. And, and then in addition to that, I had a big infestation of gophers. It just wiped me out. I had 14,000 plants, and I ended up with 210 plants.
Oh, my God. Well, tell me, when you plant them, do you use a planter or a machine that plants them, or do you plant them by hand?
No.
It's like a strawberry planter, then.
It's a mechanical transplanter. That's the trade name of it.
Well, do you write on it and put the plant in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I'll tell you, I planted thousands of strawberry plants that way. When I was a kid, we planted, you know, with a shovel.
Yeah.
But of course, we raised strawberries.
Yeah. Well, and it was probably the same type of transplanter. But you can't imagine the transplanted equipment that they've got today.
Wow, really?
It's unbelievable. I went to every 2 years, Italy has this big farm machinery thing in Bologna. And I went to that in 2005. And
oh, wow.
Italians make the finest farm machinery.
Really?
In the world. Oh, yeah.
Better than John Deere, huh?
Yeah.
Really?
I think even I've got all John Deere, but I also have Mashio equipment, the tilling equipment. But when it comes to tilling equipment, not tractors, I'm not saying that, because although Italy makes a lot of good tractors, but the tilling machinery and the planting machinery and everything like that, it's unbelievable. I had a Matermac, it was an Italian made seeding machine that you could plant a seed every 2 inches. It was amazing to watch those onions come up that way. I mean,
really?
They were just like they were soldiers in a row.
Well, what did they use back in the olden days to plant the onions?
Well, they started with the walking drills, you know, one drill at a row. And then, of course, when I was growing up, they had a Bolan tractor with three Planet Junior drills behind it, and they planted three rows at a time. But, mm-hmm.
Three rows at a time, that's what we used to weed.
Yeah, but then Bud, when he quit, he had 8 rows.
Wow.
And then all of the hoeing equipment for the tractors was set up. So the first year I came back, well, it was after Bud died, but when I had the whole thing planted, my labor was $65,000.
Good God, really?
Yeah. And
well, how many people did you hire?
Well, I only had about five. No, I had more than that. I guess I had.
Where'd you get your help?
It would vary, but
where did you get your help? Local people or
no? Well, I had who is still with me. I mean, he still takes care of me. Manuel Lopez, who lives in Aunt Jane's house down there.
Oh, I see.
I rented that from my nephew for him to live in, and he used to be a cement finisher, but his family in Mexico were farmers, and he was interested in fact he's raising some tomatillos on the place this year. But and then I left it up to Manuel to find the but I had a big payroll.
Well,
but now, well, and that was because I didn't want to use any chemicals. I mean,
good for you.
Bud used well, I discovered that you can use Prowl. I mean, Prowl is an unrestricted a chemical for weeds. In fact, I'm going to try to use some of that this year.
We used to have on our strawberries, we used to have Bud Hess bring a crew out, and he would bring out winos and hold the strawberries.
Isn't that
Bud Hess worked for us for years.
Pardon me?
Bud Hess worked for us for years.
Yeah. Bud, see, Fred kind of helped Bud, Fred, Bud's dad.
Yeah.
Fred helped my brother Bud and Mom a lot. And I can remember one year that field down there that's part of the Cummins land. See, this piece where I'm sitting on now was some French name. Dad bought it from the McNulty estate.
Oh, so this wasn't part of the...
This wasn't part of Cummins land. See, Cummins had a hell of a lot of land scattered all over the county. In fact, he had almost 700 acres over there around Stafford. Besides this, I mean, and then I think it was the McRobbins land grant, which is across Sipal Road where the old grade school is. That, I think that was called the McRobbins land grant.
Hmm.
Cummins bought that because McRobbins died in...
I don't remember McRobbins. Wasn't McKinney.
may have been McKinney. I know it was McSomebody. I never Johnny Joe, Joe's son. Mm-hmm. I have another nephew that's Johnny Mike.
Oh, okay. And,
but that's Alan's son. But Johnny Joe was the one that gave me, and I thought he said McRobin.
Well, I know McKinney.
See, I could never figure out how Grandpa Galbraith came into that land, because see, Aunt Cal, well, and then Chet's place was at one time Grandpa Galbraith had that, because that's Eva.
Eva was his daughter.
Was the daughter,
yeah,
and
right.
Married Fishbrook. But I could never figure out how that. I knew it wasn't part of this land grant because this thing here goes down Sipo Road. But anyway, Cummins had a lot of land scattered all
well,
over.
Well, Cummins was also related to the Bird family. His wife was a Bird, wasn't she?
Yeah.
And they were up in Stafford.
Martha. Yeah.
Rachel.
Yeah. Well, that maybe that's how I got the connection over there. Well, see, they came in the Bird wagon train. Sam, great-grandpa Sam, came in
I the thought Bird. The Birds got here before that. No?
Well,
you would know
they
more
were
than
in
I...
the Bird wagon train.
Okay, my gosh.
I know that. Well, no, I think they came in 1852.
Okay, it could be.
Because Grandpa Joe was 6 months old when they got here. He was born in Iowa, and obviously the only way you get here at the age of 6 months would be in the wagon train. And I was always told it was the Bird wagon train.
Well, you're probably right.
Well, I don't know, because now you've piqued my curiosity.
Well,
I was also told by somebody when I was in the Army that Martha Bird was connected to Senator Bird's family, from the senator from Virginia.
It's
the
spelled
old,
differently, isn't it?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
But
that's quite likely.
I don't think so. They would have been Republicans. Well, as a matter of fact, I'm running out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry to keep you.
No, hang on. This won't tell you everything that you don't already, anything that you don't already know. Yeah, I'd like to go through those with you someday.
This, who is
that's
this?
That's Jim Chinaman.
Oh, that's it. Oh, my God.
John C. Young.
That's a workhorse.
He is the Mr. Hung of Sipo.
Whose horse was? Was that his horse?
That's in front of that big old barn that used to be down here that blew down.
Sake.
That's probably 1933 or something like that.
The last story I just wrote that came out yesterday was about myself when I was a kid and a horse. I'll have to show it to you. Anyway, go ahead. Oh, boy.
George, I never really trust these things implicitly.
Well, yeah,
because they're kind of like vanity publications.
I absolutely buy it.
I found this for $12 over in Aurora. And let's see, I can't remember. I think it's four. Anyway, George's biography is in here, and it gives you. I suppose they could use the index.
Is there an index in the back?
Yeah, there is. I think it's 487. Where the hell are my glasses? Hmm. Yeah, I got to use the index. I don't know why 487 sticks in my mind, but that's, let's see. This is the thing, and actually it's more about Sam than it is about George. I'm sure he was very proud of his dad, but this is the one where he talks about him going down to for the Indian War. Let's see, Georgia. And this is the one that confirmed the story that the family was wiped out in New Orleans from the cholera epidemic.
Sarah, I think they were first cousins.
Yeah, they were. In fact, it appears to me that that has happened more than once in the Galbraiths.
Oh, dear.
Because in this thing that, Brenda, I have never been able to run down Sam's parents. But Brenda found some stuff, but she couldn't get the first name because it was coming off see back here. See, Sam's parents were both named Galbraith.
Oh my God!
and I don't know whether. Well, see, that was like in 1870. Sam was born in. This says 1814, but I was always told it was born in 1812. But so this is in the 1700s. And in Cumberland County, I have the 1780 census, I think it was, for Cumberland County. There were 14 Galbraiths in there. And the thing that makes me think they were probably there long before that, because this indicates where Brenda got this, was that great-grandpa Sam's mother was born in Germany. And all of these guys have always touted Scotch.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Galbraith
does not sound like a German name.
Well, and it is a Scottish name, and there is, because they had a calling of the clan, and it shouldn't have been clan, because Galbraith was not a clan, it was a family. And they were under the protection of the MacDonald clan.
Oh, MacDonalds.
But Galbraith is the only one of the very few families that had their own tartan. But because tartans usually were just
the clans.
But there is a Galbraith tartan. But anyway, there were 14 Galbraiths in that census. One of them had a slave.
Oh.
And see, Pennsylvania was the first state that freed all its slaves. And I don't know whether they were slaves or indentured servants.
Oh, right,
because a lot of the slaves in the South were brought here initially as indentured servants,
right.
but then they became slaves. But at any rate, this story relates them having gone. And the whole family was wiped out except for Sam. And that's always been the family story. But I've never found it in writing any place until I hit this thing here. I always thought that Galbraith that had the slave was probably Sam's dad. Because that's the reason they went to New Orleans.
Oh,
see, when they were,
and, sure.
But I've never been able to, and I'm going to nail that down someday when I figure out how to use the goddamn computer. But he relates that in here. I. I'll have this page copied for you.
Oh, I would love that.
If you want. But it gives us quite a bit of stuff on both George and Sam. But the story that I had, that they see, and also the family story that I always had, that Cummins came and established his land grant here because this is the same as the land grant in Steuben County, New York. I mean, it's Beaver Dam.
Oh, and that's why he wanted the land. Oh, my God.
That's why he wanted the.
Oh, that is a wonderful
information. And they still raise onions in Steuben County.
Wow.
And I ran in two or three guys in different times. The most recent one, I ran into a waiter who was from Steuben, New York.
Really?
Yeah, their big claim to fame there is they make big church candles, you know, or Easter candles,
right,
and things like that. I mean, that was one of the things, but
Well, I don't want to keep you.
I think we could go on forever.
I've
got another.
Yeah.
Half hour because I told you.
I'd like to do a little story or think about it about the Chinaman.
Yeah. I can tell you a lot of story about Jim. He used to bring us. What is they call the Chinese chestnuts?
Water chestnuts.
No.
Lychee.
Yeah, lychee nuts.
Oh, okay.
Lychee nuts. He used to bring those. He'd have them in his pocket all the time.
Really?
That's another thing that I get. And I couldn't have been more than 4 years old at that time because I know Jim died in 1934. See, the reason he's down there is because Dad kind of took care of him. And then, that's how he ends up buried down there. And we weren't so wealthy that we could afford a stone for him. And it went without a stone a long time. It just had one of those wire things in front of it. And then, it was when I was in law school. And we always took care of his grave. We always put flowers on it. And in fact, I still do.
Oh, bless you.
But Joe called me and said, there's a tombstone on Jim's grave down here. And the only thing that we can figure out is that the tome went back and made amends.
Good gosh.
And the tome went out there and put that stone on. It's a nice little stone. In fact, I got to get down there and clean it before Memorial Day because the grass is going on. But it's a nice stone, and by the standards of the time it went in there, I think it was really even a fairly expensive stone. But that's the only reason that I can figure out that it's there. We had always planned on doing it, but it's just one of those things
sure.
I never get around to. I want to get a stone for Thelma down there. But
well, listen, Bill, I'll leave now. But what I would like to do is have you bring all this stuff down to the Heritage Center, and I'll have someone there who will scan all your pictures and the things in.
Okay.
But we'll have to make an appointment to do that.
These are all of the pictures of the grade school from the last class from the last class up here to the first class down there.
Oh, really?
And this is the 1930, it would probably be about 1936. Raymond Steyert, Betty Lou, Francis Wager, Vilda Sergino, Helen Wager, Arlene Peterson, Irene Orr, me, Audrey Steyert, Earl Edel.
Audrey Steyert?
Yeah.
I didn't know there was an Audrey.
Oh, there are several. their family was bigger than ours.
Oh.
Yeah, Joan was probably next to that. I think there was a boy that was the youngest.
Yeah, Carl.
And he's still alive.
Carl. Joan died.
Well, and Raymond's still alive.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's out at the coast. You know, he ran over his wife.
Oh, God.
Accident, and it's really bothered me.
Yeah, Joan was in my...
They were down there cleaning, you know, after a storm, and the last thing he remembered is seeing her going in the house, and he was backing a load of crap up to take it out.
That's
really
terrible.
Sad, sad story. Keith Gates, that's another Steyer.
Keith Gates died in the Second World War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's right. Annette Wager.
She's still alive, but she's not doing well.
Yeah, I've got to go look. And I was in love with both of all three of those guys at some point in my life. But in fact, her dad, I've got some buckshot in my back from her dad.
Frank Wager?
When I was stealing watermelons.
Oh, God.
But that's a Krause. That's Leanna Dipman. Let's see. I think that's a Hess. That's a Steyer. That's Agnes. Can't remember that. That's Nels Anderson.
Oh, was he a school board or what?
No, he was a teacher.
Nels Anderson was a teacher?
He was.
I didn't know that.
Well, you know, Gerda Sergina was his sister.
Yeah.
And she taught down there. And that's how Dave married. We ended up, Dave and Dad were on the school board down there.
Let me talk.
The Galbraiths were always big in education.
Yeah, you were.
Too.
Yes, yes.
You know, I've got the roster for the school up here on the old school, the sandpit school, I guess is what they call it. And you know, Dad is in there, but Uncle Buzz is in there at age 20.
Oh gosh, took that long.
And I'm sure it's because Grandpa Joe insisted that
he graduated.
You're going to know how to read and write. And all
I'll be darned. Because my dad was born in 1901, and he didn't graduate.
Also, I have my dad's draft registration card, and your grandfather was the one that signed his registration card.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, it's Martinez. It's
J.C.
J.C., yeah.
Julius Caesar.
Yeah, J.C. Martinez. He is the one that...
Well, I know that he was on the school board, chairman of the school board and several other things. Oh, my gosh.
It's upstairs.
Oh, my gosh.
I've got that.
Oh, my gosh.
And I've got Dad's driver's license.
Wow.
Let's see. That's my sister, Tootie, or Clarabelle, and that's Bernice Cole. That's one of the Olens, I think. That's Drayton Dipman. I got the whole list here someplace, but because we pieced it on. That's Miss Solms. That's Lorraine Sergino. She just died here last year. Lorraine and Velda, and then there was Irma, were Johnny Sergino's.
Well, I see...
Well,
not Irma.
And he also had a son who's still living in kind of a questionable area.
Well, didn't he beat up Bud Hess and rob him?
I don't know.
I think so.
I've never heard that story. You mean Johnny or the kid?
The kid. The kid was in Irma's brother. I can't remember his name.
Ronnie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was up at the Six Corners at that tavern.
Oh, yeah, that could be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Bud was kind of a questionable guy himself.
Well, you know, Bud spent time in the pen.
He's what?
Bud spent time in the pen for armed robbery.
And you know what? He knew that Bennett Thompson who killed the Gore woman. Bud told me that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, let's see. This is the last class up there.
Now, this is before Cypole School?
Yeah, this is the old school.
The old sandpit.
The hill, yeah. And there's Bud and Tootie, Chet, Fishbrook, Joe, Anna, Delmer Sergino.
Delmer Sergino or Walgrave?
Mildred, pardon me?
Or Walgrave. Delmer.
Walgrave. Janie was his mother. Mm-hmm. Janie Sergino was his mother.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, Earl Reiser's mother was...
Was a Sergino,
But Mildred has... let's see... Maxine is in there someplace. I know she is.
Now, Maxine was your cousin?
Yeah, Maxine.
She married Johnny Jurgens?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're all inbred.
I know it. You know what? My dad used to say that the Balls and the Jurgens and the Galbraiths used to run around together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I found something that had a Ball signature on it here the other day.
Too. Well, Isaac Ball was a justice of the peace.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was a school teacher.
I know what it was. He married...
Isaac Ball married Margaret Robbins.
Well, he also married...
married, I say, as justice of the peace, yeah.
Well, he also married Grandpa and...
Rachel?
Yeah. Well, in fact, I think your mother wrote... No. I've got... What is it? All of this stuff is stacked up in the bedroom. In fact, that's what this stuff is down here. I've been trying to organize it a little bit. But Ball married Grandpa and Rachel at the father's residence.
At Rachel's father's residence.
Yeah, Cummins.
Cummins. So it would have been down here. Oh, my gosh.
It would have been right down here.
My God.
Yeah.
Well, we got to talk later. Yeah. And you have to come into the Heritage Center sometime. We'll make an appointment, and we make copies of all this stuff.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, what I'd like to do is just take a whole day sometime, too, with you and go through some of this stuff.
I think we could talk forever. I mean, yeah. there seems so much going on.
Well, the problem is I get started on something, and then that brings up something else, and I jump over for a while.
I think we never get our book finished, because when you find out something, it just makes you want to find out something more. It just goes on and on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just completely fascinating.
So I'm going to turn this off, but I can't thank you enough.
Well, thanks for coming up, because I've been wanting to do this thing on the Filbert Orchard. And I'm trying to run down, like I say, all of these biographies for Ruth K. or Ruth Key Fong. And
is it Fong or
Home? I can't remember now. Tootie's daughter, we had one of these things that's called... I can't remember, but it's the same type of book.
You know, right, yeah. Yeah, several people did those books.
Vanity publication.
Yeah.
And it's got Grandpa Cummins in it. In fact, it's got a picture of him that I've always wanted to get. Tootie had it, and then her daughter ended up with it, and I hope she still got it.
Now, what's Tootie's real name?
Clarabelle.
Clarabelle. Why do they call her Tootie?
Pardon me?
Why did they call her Tootie?
Oh, that's what they called her. She never liked Clarabelle.
I see.
In fact, she never went back to, even when she was living in Pendleton, she went by Claire. But but Tootie is all I ever remember. I mean, I never even knew her name was Clarabelle until I was in high school. But see, there's 2 years difference between the first five and 4 years difference between last four.
Your dad got tired, huh?
Yeah, well, I know.
Poor women. My God, women.
Yeah.
Women had such a hard life.
Think about it. But it's got, I think it's got Grandpa Joe in it, too. But I ran across this one. I bought this outfit. Mom's furniture was almost exactly like it. It has exactly
the same
legs on it.
Oh my gosh!
And it's down in the barn.
Oh my God!
I was going to have it refinished, but they want They wanted $2,500 a piece for the table and the buffet.
Wow.
And I didn't have any of the chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And Joanne, my friend, her sister deals and stuff like that. And she ran into this over in Aurora.
Hmm.
And I got the whole damn thing for $1,200.
Oh, my gosh, that's beautiful.
And it, it's probably about 1927, 25, mm-hmm. something like that. But it's made by the same company that Mom's Furniture. Mom's came from, what was the old furniture store in Portland that went out of business here just a few years ago? Anyway, and it's got the stuff on the underneath mm-hmm. the table, and it's made by the same company that this is. So
wow.
I bought this and stored it down there. I'm going to give that table to Don Kelly, Anna's son, because
mm-hmm.
he likes to refinish it.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Bill, and for God's sakes, let's get together again and get some of this stuff documented.
This is Grandma Bill.
Grandma who?
Grandma Rachel.
Rachel, yeah. Oh, boy. Hmm. She's got quite a lot of character to her. You know, she's
yeah.
a very interesting person.
I think she died in 1917 or 14.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's probably why Grandpa took up with that woman.
That woman. Oh, that is so funny. I love that. You got a nice place here.
Well, actually, the floor plan is, except that was Mom's bedroom, but I just opened it up, and
mm-hmm.
I did put a new floor down.
Oh, yeah, the floor's nice.
Well, this was oak,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, and the upstairs is all straight grain fir. It's beautiful, beautiful.
Wow.
But, and I was going to have all the straight grain fir refinished. But of course, it had linoleum over it, and the stuff that they put the linoleum on
the paste, glue.
Stained it so bad. The guy said, "There's no way."
Yeah, isn't that a shame that people did that?
Yeah,
that
he did a really great job on the upstairs.
Yeah. I got to run.
This is a Brazilian cherry.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Well, I got to run, but let's talk again.
Okay, well, I got to go too. But
yeah,
I would really enjoy spending a whole day with you.
Oh, we could talk forever.
I'd even make some raviolis for you.
Oh, hey, you got a deal.
So, okay.
All right, bye-bye. Thanks. I don't think I did it right. I just, part says he didn't speak very loud, and I kept pushing him closer. Oh, my God. This guy goes back. He's got pictures. Something with our yard. I can't turn it off. Sorry, I didn't do it right. Oh. Oh, stop. Frankly, if you had been interviewing him, you would have not known one thing to ask him. Why would you do it? I Larry, I don't know. You don't know anything. You don't know anything about his background. Oh, it's in the Oregonian. Oh, I lent him $100,000. Thank you.
And what is it he called me about?
Well, it's recorded. How about on? Off? It's on off. Noise cancel. Play okay. Oh, shit. I'll bet I didn't get it.
I'm not even sure I did that right. And the guy talked so softly. We said wonderful things. I could talk to you forever. I mean, experience, but I'm not sure I did this right. Oh, and I forgot to have him sign it. I'm not sure I did it right.
Okay, so
I couldn't.
Let's do playback. Okay, let's stop. Let's do playback. I don't even know how to use this, but let me see. Turn it up. Okay, wait, stop. It's on. Okay, how do I make it not record? Oh, I'm sure you did it right. You did it last time.
It just seemed different this time. And then I couldn't turn it on.